The following presentation is brought to you by The Realm Network.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to John Hutton, a guy you've probably never heard of before, but who's been my friend for the last 8 years. He's just published his first book, A Daily Dose of Innocence. It's a warm collection of essays about family, faith, classic rock, cafeteria workers, sports, and peanut butter. I liked it so much, I published it myself. Stick around. With every dose of innocence, you can still count on a healthy measure of fun. Right, John?
That's right, Bob.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is the Mr. Media Interview, brought to you today by Amazon.com. When you visit MrMedia.com and click on any of the links to purchase books, music, movies, gift certificates, or anything else through our Amazon link, you support this free video podcast. Whenever you need something else from Amazon, please consider returning to MrMedia.com to order it. It doesn't cost you any extra, and we sure appreciate the support. And don't forget, MrMedia.com has more than 1,200 celebrity audio and video interviews archived on the site. That's hundreds upon hundreds of hours free entertainment. Subscribe for free on MrMedia.com, and you'll instantly get an email every time a new interview is posted. You can also watch and subscribe to the show on YouTube, Vimeo, Daily Motion, The Realm Network, and Frequency.com. And if you prefer to just listen, Mr. Media is also available for free on iTunes, Spreaker, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Blueberry, TuneIn, Blog Talk Radio, Podfeed.net, and Player FM. You can subscribe to any of those services and never miss another episode. Finally, you can interact with Mr. Media Interviews on all kinds of social media, including Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and more. Friend or follow us, we'll friend or follow you back. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience full of former bankers who will never get their memoirs published if I have anything to say about it, in the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida. John Hutton and I have spent hundreds of hours together watching preteen girls. Don't get the wrong idea. We're soccer coaches. At least we were for many, many years. One day, standing on the sidelines, or maybe it was on a long bus ride for an away game somewhere, John started telling me about this book he was writing. It sounded very personal, with short essays about everything from being a fraternity brother at Wake Forest to following his father into banking, and from the joys of volunteering to the mysteries of fatherhood. For years, I teased my friend about finishing his book so I could read it. Well, it literally took years, but he surprised me one day and said it was done. Now, I had to read it. And that created a new problem. What if it was terrible? What if I hated it? How would I tell this man that I had come to think of as a brother that he couldn't write? Sometimes, my friends, I worry too much. A Daily Dose of Innocence, as John calls it, is a delightful read, full of down-to-earth homilies, advice, good cheer, insight, and a spot of sadness here and there. It is remarkably reflective of my friend's joie de vivre and his ability to lift the spirits of anyone he meets. The book is faith-based at times without being preachy, which is a great part of its charm. Not only did I love the book, but I decided to publish it myself under my new imprint, Mr. Media Books. I don't know how I could recommend it any more strongly to you than that. John Hutton, welcome to Mr. Media.
Thanks, Bob. Great to be here.
Good to have you. Good to see you, my friend. So, John, banker, husband, father, I had to write this down, grandfather, preschool teacher, girls soccer coach, writer. What made you ever think that you had a book in you?
Wow, that's a great question. It's just one of those things that came up after I retired from banking and moved down here to Tampa from Newburgh, New York, and I had some free time on my hands. My brother Bob, who passed away a couple of years ago, had written some memoirs and some genealogical tracks about our family, and I think that inspired me a little bit, and just got involved that way. So it's been a labor of love for about the last 5 years. Hmm.
And can you explain in your own words kind of what holds A Daily Dose of Innocence together?
Well, I think it's a collection of very short stories that bring back a lot of touching memories to me, as well as some advice that I hope to be able to give to folks, you know, in my generation and maybe a little younger as well. Just some plain old, unfancy language advice about life and some of the great things that occur in it.
When is that point, John, in life when you realize that you actually have advice to give to people?
Well, I certainly can't point to an exact moment, but I can say with some assuredness that once I had children start into my life, which was about 13 years ago, and when I hit that magic age of 50, which was just about the time the good old millennium came in and everybody thought that computers were going to crash and we were all going to just croak right then and there, I think it was right after that that I got kind of inspired to try to do something more with my life than I had up to that time.
I thought the answer was going to be when I had kids.
Because, well, a little after that.
All right. Because it sort of seems like after you've been a parent for a number of years, maybe 5, maybe 10 years, you sort of realize that you've been dispensing advice and direction to someone. Maybe you never thought you would do it, whether it's you or me or anyone else. And then suddenly it comes a little more easily over time, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, I think it certainly does. I think at the time I was trying to dispense that advice to my 3 kids, I was so caught up in my job and the pressures of work and a lot of other organizational things that I had been involved with, pardon me, at my church and at other volunteering in the community. I guess I was just too caught up in the now to really reflect back on some of the memories that I had up to that point in my life.
And what inspired the title, A Daily Dose?
That's a great question. I belong to a Presbyterian church here in New Tampa, and our pastor, Freddie Fritz, who's a South African by birth but a fairly new American citizen, preached a little sermon on a Christmas Eve a few years back, and he mentioned this Daily Dose of Innocence in his sermon. So I credit Fred with the help for that title. It just stuck in my brain. I grabbed a pencil as I was sitting in the church pew, and I just wrote it on the back of the program, the church program, A Daily Dose of Innocence, and I brought it home with me and just tucked it aside for a little while, but it was always there. That's where the idea came from.
Yeah, it matches up to the content very well, I think. I remember the first time that I read the manuscript, I knew I was in trouble when it brought a tear to my eye more than once, and I kind of wanted to ask you, what were some of the tougher things that you wrote about?
Well, certainly I have a little chapter in there about my Uncle Ray Nelson. Uncle Ray was a great guy, like most uncles are, you know, one of those guys that's always, you know, got you and hugging you and telling you the jokes that maybe your mom or dad wouldn't pass on to you. And when he passed away, I actually had a son, my aunt, and he had a son who died, predeceased them. And when I was in the church for that service, and my Uncle Ray, who was a great saxophone player, got up and played a Gershwin tune in honor of his son, that really got me. And as I wrote about it and thought about it, you know, a tear came to my eye as well, for sure.
I remember that story. And another thing that I remember is there's a story of a child being left out in the snow, complete accident. Do you mind sharing that story?
Well, that was my son, Spencer, and he was in half-day kindergarten at the time, and it was in the depths of winter, and my wife and I both worked, and he would get the bus home at about 12 o'clock, and we had a babysitter, I guess you'd call him a child sitter, who was always there to pick up Spencer at the bus stop. Well, this one particular day, For some reason, the child sitter forgot. And of course, it was snowing, and Spencer got off the bus and no one was there. He walked home and he came right back because he did what he was told to stay put. And the snow was piling up on him. And of course, I only found out about this later. And thank goodness, my good friend Bob Patterson, who lived in the neighborhood, but who never came home for lunch, just happened home that particular day, saw Spencer standing there shivering in the cold, took him in, got him into his house, warmed him up, and of course called us so we could come and get him. So that was quite a moment, and one I'll never forget.
And that's the thing about the book. It's full of what you might call kind of ordinary moments that, you know, we all go through, but I mean, you capture them very well. And, you know, it's kind of that common man touch, I guess, that people talk about. I think that's apparent in the book.
Well, I appreciate that. That certainly was in the back of my mind. Although I use some personal stories, I also try to have a more universal appeal in the book to the common man and woman, if you will, by just some general thoughts as well as those that touch me in particular personally.
Well, okay, let's talk common for a minute. You loved telling me for years that you had written a chapter about peanut butter. Can't get any more common than peanut butter, John. Why peanut butter?
Peanut butter. Eat peanut butter every day, Bob, with a rare exception. Met a guy when I was a teenager and we used to go camping up in the Adirondack Mountains in upstate New York, and I met a fellow up there who worked at a gas station, a service station as they used to call them, Bob, where they'd come out and pump your gas and wipe your windshield down for you. And I just blurted out to him, because he was an older gentleman, I said, how old are you? I think he told me he was 93 years old. Here's your secret, you know. He said, peanut butter, son, peanut butter. I eat it every day. So that got me started. I used to eat peanut butter before that, but I was hooked on it after that. And to this day, an English muffin or a bagel in the morning with peanut butter and a glass of orange juice is my daily fare. So it keeps me going.
Right. And there's other chapters in the book that are more simple, like you list your favorite movies. Got a favorite movie of all time, John?
It's got to be The Godfather, Bob, you know, with the actors, of course, the sets, the scenery, the plot itself based on, Mario Puzo's book. Just fantastic. And the only movie whose sequel and itself both won, you know, the Academy Award for Best Picture. I don't think that's ever been done in history except for The Godfather, Godfather Part Two.
Mm-hmm. And then classic rock, big fan of classic rock.
I like music of all genres. Like music of all genres, but certainly, you know, classic rock. Being a teenager and a young adult in the 60s, I mean, come on, saw the Beatles hit Ed Sullivan, saw the Doors, saw, you know, Jimi Hendrix in concert live, Big Brother and the Holding Company, the Chambers Brothers, on and on. I'd go on forever about that. Actually, I didn't import this in the book. I don't believe I did, but I had an opportunity to go to Woodstock. Yes, I did say this, and got hurt playing soccer, of all things, the night before the great concert started. All my buddies went. Had to hear war stories for years after that about Woodstock, you know. So they're still going on, you know, 40, 50 years later. But love that classic rock. That's my favorite.
All right. And then finally, one more from the chapters on of this sort of lists. What's the best dessert to have after dinner?
Well, there's a lot. I mean, ice cream is my traditional favorite, you know, and butter pecan ice cream is as good as it gets. But there's probably 1,000 desserts that I could share with you. My wife's banana pudding is terrific, and my sister-in-law Janet's cake. White cake with chocolate icing. So it's no wonder I weigh about 220 right now, you know, because just can't stay away from some of those great desserts.
I've been meaning to tell you, you need to have a book launch party that's just dessert.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I have to mull that one over.
Yeah, we can talk about that later. Okay. so who were you thinking, I mean, if you gave this any thought, I don't know, that the audience for a book like this would be? Who were you hoping would read the book?
Yeah, well, initially when I started, it was just going to be my family. You know, my relatives. I've got a rather unique situation in that I had a brother, I mentioned, recently passed away, and a sister, but they were 21 and 20 years older than me. My sister's still alive up in Long Island. My sister had 7 children, my brother 4, so my nieces and nephews were more like my cousins and younger brothers and sisters, if you will. In fact, my oldest nephew is only 3 years younger than me to the day, same birthday. So the first appeal was basically to family. And then as I got thinking about it and as I started writing, I just wanted to expand on that a little bit and see if I couldn't incorporate a little more universality. Is that a word? If it isn't, I just invented it. You know, it just kind of grew on me that have a little more universal appeal. So we'll see where it goes now that it's out and published. But hopefully it'll get some appeal out there.
Well, speaking of that, you managed to keep the contents of the book a secret from your family all these years. I still can't believe Bonnie, your wife, did not read a page of it. She wasn't curious. She never. Now that she's read the whole book, she hasn't admitted that she'd been peeking over your shoulder or sneaking into the computer to read it at night?
Yeah, no, she actually never did. She, not to my knowledge, and she's a very truthful person, so I'm sure that she had not. But not until, in fact, the night before last did she finish reading the book. So, and she never looked at a page and never really asked me that much about it, because I kind of told her I was going to keep it under wraps and then I'd let her see it all when I was finished. Hmm.
And now that she's read it, did she feel that maybe you gave away too much, or
No, she gave me a 5-star review on this, and I was very happy, because I was a little nervous about a few of the things that I mentioned, and there's nothing that controversial, but I didn't know if she would necessarily agree with my points of view. So, but she seemed to enjoy it very much.
Good. I told you I thought that she would. I think it's the kind of thing where a lot of people publish books and a lot of people don't publish anything that other people need to read. But this is just different. There's something in the tone, in the way you wrote it, in the stories that you tell. I think it's pretty universal. Yeah, I mean, you use the word universality. It's pretty universal. I think anyone could get something useful from reading the book. Our commonality, of course, at least at the beginning, there's been a lot more, was our interest in coaching girls' soccer. You did it many more years than I did. Your kids are a little older than mine. What kept you coming back to soccer all those years?
All three of my children played growing up in youth leagues, in high school, and so on and so forth. So I was involved in it very early on. At a time when girls really had to play on boys' teams, when my oldest daughter, Amber, started playing, she had to play on a boys' travel team for a couple of years. And then, of course, the soccer mom thing started coming into vogue and more young ladies played. And I just stuck with it there. I enjoyed it so much. Gave it up for a while when I went away to college. But then after getting married, coming back, I had played myself in high school. In fact, I was on the very first boys soccer team that my high school, Newburgh Free Academy, had back in 1966, but gave it up for a while in college, etc. But then after my oldest daughter turned about 7 or 8 years old, read an article in the paper, a local paper, about the town recreation department league, and got involved volunteering there and just fell in love with it. So enjoyed it ever since.
And both of us kept coaching after our daughters were out of the game, which I think it surprises a lot of people. They're like, what? You kept doing it? I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. That's something that many people drop and go to something else once their own children move on. But it was a great thing when I got to Shorecrest Preparatory School. Gee, it's been almost 8 years now since I started there. And I got involved with soccer right away there. They needed they had a coaching position open in the girls' middle division, which is 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, as you know. And, met a lot of nice people through that, Bob. And so happy that you and I were able to hook up and coach. A little upset with the fact that you did top my 8-0-1 record a couple of years back with your tremendous undefeated season.
Yeah.
But enjoyed coaching with you. And, of course, your daughter Rachel was on a team that we coached. And we just had so many good times and good memories and fun with the girls during that period of time. It's been terrific.
Now, folks, I got to tell you, John set the bar very high. The first year we were there, the school had two teams. He had one team, I had another, and his very first season, he took the girls, and he was 8-0-1. I forgot about the tie. Mm-hmm. And so forever after, I was chasing him. And then finally, John retired and left, and I got my own little dream team. And, yeah, we went 15-0 and turned his record upside down. So, yes, I'm kind of proud of that. I should have retired then. I stayed 1 year too long after that, but that's another story.
That's another story.
So, but on that line, what do you think, having raised three kids who played sports, and of course, Amber is an assistant athletic director in Manhattan now, what's the key to a successful student athlete, to keeping that balance, do you think?
Well, how much do we see right now about these professional athletes and even college? I read about Winston there from Florida State this morning in a paper. The balance is critical. And I tell my grandchildren who play soccer right now here in Tampa, listen, studies come first. Athletics come second. You have to get the good grades first. And, hey, by the way, there's a lot more money available for good student grades in college than there is for athletics. So the balance is critical. But the exercise, the social nature of competition and teammates and everything is a very important part of the growing up process as well. So, it's studies first and then athletics second. But, good balance is critical.
Well said, my friend. So you've got one book. It's out. We're encouraging people to take a look at it now. What's next? When do you start on book two?
I don't know. I got my Medicare card in the mail the other day. In fact, I have an appointment next week to go sign up. So I'm not sure I'm going to have that energy, but I've thought about it a little bit. And I've thought about maybe a collection of short essays on a variety of topics. I do have a short essay that I've stored on my computer for years about my father. It's just called Pop. And it's a memoir that I have of him. He was 45 years old when I was born, so a little unusual in that when I got to be a teenager, he was darn near 60 and ready for retirement, but still a great influence on my life. A lot of great memories of my father, who lived to be 92, died in his sleep on his 92nd birthday. And I still have a lot of fond memories there. So I was thinking about that and some other subjects, maybe for a little book of short essays. So we'll see.
All right. Well, you know who to come to first.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, folks, listen, you can find John Hutton's new family and faith-based book of short essays. It's called A Daily Dose of Innocence. It's in great bookstores everywhere. Any bookstore in America can order it for you, or you can order it right now at a great price at MrMedia.com. And if you watch the show, you know how this works. If you're watching on MrMedia.com, below the video screen, either over there or over there, is the cover of the book. You can click on it right now, and Amazon will send it to you via drone within 30 minutes or less. Or if you're not in an area that they're serving with drones, you can get it in a day or two very quickly. And get that Amazon Prime so you don't have to pay for shipping. John, I think, as I recall, people can find you on Facebook if they look.
Yes, they can, yeah.
All right. And there is a page about your book on MrMediaBooks.com, MrMediaBooks.com. And I got to say, as a friend for many years now and continuing, I'm very proud of you for getting this done. I think you wrote a terrific book, and I hope everybody will give it a look. And, John, thank you for joining us in Mr. Media today.
Thank you, Bob, so much, and hearing a wonderful friendship with you.
Hi, this is Buzz Burbank in the Buzz Burbank Newsroom, preparing for you another Buzz Burbank News and Comment.
Do you like good stories? Boy, I sure do. I turn over a lot of stones each day to make sure I don't miss the best ones. Sure, some make me angry, and some make me sad, and some make me laugh, and isn't that what makes us human? I'm proud of the fact that I pack more news into my 10 or 15 minutes a day than the evening news does in a half hour. It's a free podcast at buzzburbank.com, or you can subscribe free at iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or get it on any RSS device. It's like a newspaper for your head. It's Buzz Burbank News and Comment, another Realm Network presentation. Weekday mornings right here on the Realm Network.
It's the Mark and Lowell Show.
Hi, this is Mark.
And this is Lowell. And if you're fans of Don and Mike, you may know who we are.
Our number one interns. You've met them on the show. They're the guys that ate all the junk. And they were outside with each other holding hands with a sign that said that they loved each other wearing the dunce caps.
What you may not know is that we started out as fans back in their WAVA days.
Hi, Don and Mike. It's Mark and Lowell.
Oh, yeah. Hey, these are two guys that we once actually called them our proteges, didn't we?
And now we have our own show, so we want you to give it a shot.
Just check us out at the Realm Network, realmnetwork.com, or you can go to markandlowell.com.
The Mark and Lowell Show.
Every Tuesday and Thursday evenings right here on the Realm Network, and catch the Poor Premium Show Friday nights. This is Adam and Asid
to the Extreme.
So, I'm sorry, did you ever see the film Rubber?
I've seen Flubber.
I've heard of Rubber. Isn't that about like a tire or something? Like,
it is. Dude, Adam, you got to watch this movie. I'm serious.
Rubber?
It's so great. It's about a serial killer that is a tire. You know, kind of like Christine was a car. It's a tire.
And how much LSD was the director on when he...
I don't know. But it's great because what happens without giving anything away, the tire just kind of rolls into place, very sinister, and there's the person in the background. This was a highly entertaining movie. And the greatest thing, and I'm going to paraphrase this, but there's a scene where the local sheriff has got all his deputies together. He's describing this tire, and one of the deputies goes... Is he black?
Right here on the Realm Network.